50s and lower 60s. It's 9:06, and this is NHPR.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The Nashua Telegraph recently reported a rare success story in New Hampshire's battle against invasive species. According to the paper, the fast-spreading invasive water chestnut is retreating from the Nashua River. Just a few years ago, fears were that this plant would turn the river into a green carpet, but after intensive efforts involving both machine and hand-pulling of these powerful intruders, local officials say they may have it under control. Meanwhile, on the seacoast, there's news of a stepped-up effort on the invasives front. Under a new program called Pulling Together, local groups working to eradicate invasives can borrow tough, specialized weed wrenching tools from the Fish and Game Department, tools it says are especially effective at yanking up plants like glossy buckthorn, autumn olive, and multiflora rose. Still, despite this effort and many others, every summer the fight against invasive species kicks into high gear in the Granite State as wet, warm weather helps these unwelcome plants and animals thrive and take over native habitats. Today in The Exchange, we begin a two-part series on invasive species. Tomorrow, we'll look at animals, but today, we focus in on plants. Let's hear from you, too. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. What invasive plants have been spreading in your town? What impacts have you seen? What local efforts are there to combat them? We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests for the hour. Heidi Holman is here, wildlife diversity biologist with New Hampshire Fish and Game. And Heidi, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Also with us, Amy Smagula, limnologist and exotic species program coordinator for the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services. And Amy, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Laura.
And joining us by phone, Scott Ollinger, professor of natural resources and environment at UNH, associate director of the Institute for the Study of Earth, Oceans, and Space. And Scott, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Laura. Glad to be here.
Well, I want to start with the big picture before we get into some of these individual plants. And Scott, to you first, how would you say New Hampshire's battle against invasive plants is going? Are we better off? Are we worse off than we were, say, a decade ago?
Well, I think we're about a decade ago, I think we're probably a little bit worse off because it's such a persistent problem and it's difficult really to know how to get a handle on controlling some of the real persistent invasive species. We're probably better off in the sense that we're starting to understand to some degree what the mechanisms are that allow invasive species to spread. And I think we're getting a little bit better about practical decisions on how to control invasive species, and in some cases, where to decide that the battle has pretty much been lost and move on to something else that we have a better chance of controlling.
Yeah, and as I understand, you are part of a new effort to kind of pick your battles there, Scott.
Well, yeah, I'm actually about to head to Colorado in a couple of days to lead a new national science project called the National Ecological Observatory Network, and it's a complicated project, but I like to describe it as a national weather service for ecology, which the U.S. has never had before, and it's designed to monitor at a continental scale seven grand challenge areas of ecological health, and one of those is invasive species, and the American Institute of Biological Sciences released a report a while ago that took an assessment of the ecological health of U.S. landscapes and determined that invasive species and climate change were likely to be the two leading causes of ecological change across the United States. And that's one of the reasons for invasive species being highlighted at such a high level as one of the grand challenge goals of this new national science project.
Wow. Well, a lot going on, clearly, not just here in New Hampshire, but nationally. And maybe a little bit later we can talk about that philosophy of, okay, you can't combat all of these, so let's pick our battles here. Amy, you've been doing this for a long time. You and I have talked so many times about this. Same question broadly, Amy. How are we doing? And just to let the audience know, again, your area of expertise is water plants.
Right. I work with lakes and ponds and river systems across New Hampshire. And it's sort of a mixed bag in the aquatics front. We have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that there's always some new invader that's coming in from other states, potentially either a boat ride or a trailer away from another state. So it's it's always on the forefront. We're always looking for something. Right now, we have 79 water bodies in New Hampshire that are infested, and that includes lakes, ponds, and rivers. For the lakes front, that's about 8% of our lakes and ponds across New Hampshire. And some of those have multiple species. So as many as 6 in a couple of the rivers that we have, and some of our lakes and ponds have 2 or 3 in them. So that's sort of the bad news. There's always something lurking. The approaches that we're taking nowadays are definitely more focused and they're more varied. And we are seeing much more success in longer term control and actually reducing infestations to a much lower level and managing them better than we ever have. So there's a bit of good news on the aquatics front, is that the strategies are better and things are looking a lot better in the lakes, and our prevention and our early detection efforts are really high. So that is turning the tide a little bit on our front.
Sure, because if you know early on, it's easier to fix the problem when you get at it when the plants are still small.
Absolutely. And we have a great volunteer network out there that is looking and monitoring water bodies across the state so that we can find infestations when they're at the level of 1 or 2 new plants, rather than a while back, we had acres of infestation that were found and not reported until they were so large that it took a very large-scale management effort. Nowadays, when volunteers find a new infestation, it's a simple, quick hop-in, dive, hand-remove the plant, and it's gone. And we never even have to put the water body on the infested waters list.
Wow, that's great.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, so Heidi, how's it going on your front? Are you feeling as good as Amy, or the invasives on the land front not as good a picture?
Well, there's a lot of research going on currently because 42% of wildlife species that are listed tend to have a negative impact from invasive plants, and it can be a variety of ways. These invasive plants tend to affect the form or function and structure of habitat that these wildlife use, and it's sort of a black box. You don't know what's happening. And so we have come up with the Pick Your Battles mapping strategy to try to help identify areas where we can control invasive plants that will have the greatest benefit for natural resources like wildlife across the state. This new mapping effort that was created includes layers that are relative to wildlife. It could be priority wildlife habitat, transportation corridors that would be vectors, and also human values that may have an impact, like aquifers, during the treatment of these invasives. And by creating this prioritized mapping system and then providing it to local people on the ground, we're hoping to make an edge at protecting wildlife in the future.
So kind of like what Scott talked about, you know, looking at where the worst problems are, where you can really focus your efforts instead of just saying we're going to do everything all at once. You know, just real quickly, Scott, to you, since you mentioned climate change, how is the trend that we're seeing warmer summers, shorter winters? How is it affecting invasive species and their ability to crowd out native species, to harm habitat, as Heidi talked about?
Yeah, well, you know, Heidi might be better to address that than I am. But one thing I can say is that invasive species, or species that do well as invasives, tend to be good at colonizing disturbed areas. And the more we have intense storms and the more we have shifts in other species driven by climate change, that's a form of disturbance that allows some of the species that are very good invaders to get a foothold. So that's a very general sort of mechanism through which climate change interacts with invasive species.
So as the land gets more disturbed, so to speak, washed out or dried out, depending on what's going on, that's fertile ground, if I could put it that way, for invasive species, Scott.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. It often is fertile ground as well.
Well, and Heidi, you mentioned that mapping project. I want to let everybody know that we can put a link to that mapping project on our website, nhpr.org, if you want to take a look at it. We also have a link there to the Invasive Plant Atlas of New England, so you can identify any species that maybe you saw in your backyard or along the road. Again, the website, nhpr.org, if you want to look at some of the pictures of these plants that we're going to be talking about. The number for you to join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We want your questions and comments and observations conversations about invasive plants here in the Granite State. Tomorrow we'll talk about animals. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. I have a couple broader questions for you, and then I do want to get into some of the plants that you guys are most worried about. And Amy, to you, is it possible that a plant we consider invasive today, I mean, a plant that we consider native today, could have been considered invasive at one time? You know, the ecology is always changing. Plants and animals and human beings are always evolving. Is it possible that we're, you know, the thing we call invasive today might be considered native 30 years from now?
It's possible, especially with the factor of climate change occurring. But I think this sort of gets into the definitions a little bit more.
Of what invasive is.
Exactly. And we have to define a nuisance species versus an invasive species. And by definition, on the federal level, and this was actually from a presidential executive order, the invasive species are categorized as those that can cause ecological, recreational, economic, and harm to public health. So they really need to have some of those characteristics that could really influence the landscape and human health and other factors. As opposed to a nuisance species like poison ivy or a plant that is in a lake, like a lily, a general water lily that a lot of people look at and it may be encroaching on their swim area and they may not be as happy with it there, but it's a native and it's not causing harm in any way. It's not causing harm to habitat. It's actually providing habitat. It's not causing economic harm. So there's a difference between the definition there. And certainly some species can be nuisance species, but they might not necessarily be an invasive species.
And does invasive necessarily mean that it comes from somewhere else? It's not native to the area?
Yes. Most invasive species are exotic by nature or non-native by nature. So they are introduced either purposely or accidentally into a new area, which means they probably don't have a whole host of predators that will eat them or diseases that will infect them. And then they have that little competitive advantage, if you will, where they can win against the natives and take over and dominate.
Sure. There's no native predator or other thing to bring them down. But I wonder if they hang around for a while, eventually do frogs start eating them, for example, or fish start eating them, or...
We do see that there are some native insects and native frogs and fish and birds that will feed on some of the invasives in the lake systems, but not exclusively. And by the time they have reached their level of taking over a lake or pond, it really would be a big effort for those organisms to graze them down.
All right. Well, we've got to take a short break, but after that break, a lot more to talk about, and we'll take your calls. Let's check in real quickly now with our summer car raffle.
Hearing the exchange is one of the reasons you value NHPR. Help us keep the exchange coming your way by supporting NHPR right now during our summer car raffle. Pick up one ticket for $50 or three for $100 at nhpr.org or give us a call 1-888-805-6477. I'm Rebecca Lavoie in the studio along with Keith Shields.
Yes, Rebecca, and you're running out of time to join NHPR's summer car raffle. We're giving away a Trek bike with a Yakima roof rack donated by S&W Sports, a kayak from Portsmouth Kayak Adventures, and our grand prize is a new car from any of the Capone Automotive Group's 6 dealerships. 3 prizes up for grabs. All you have to do is buy a ticket for $50 or 3 for $100 when you call 1-888-805-6477 or online nhpr.org.
In addition to putting you in the running to win some great prizes in our summer car raffle, NHPR keeps you informed about national, international, and local events. Stories like this one about invasive species in the state. This is why you listen. This is why you should support the station. So pick up your raffle tickets online at nhpr.org or give us a call 1-888-805-6477.
And why do we do the car raffle? Well, it's an opportunity for us to offer something a little different. Of course, you love NHPR. You're probably even a card-carrying member. But because you place a high value on the intelligent programming that you can only find here, we appreciate your support throughout the year. And this car raffle is one of the ways we say thanks. It's just a fun way to do it. And you could possibly win either a new car or a kayak or a bike with a roof rack. So purchase your tickets one for $50, or a great deal here, three for $100 when you call 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Reporting, editing, production, research, engineering, all of these things have a role to play in the daily success of programs like The Exchange. As a listener, you also play a role in that success. The money you pay for your raffle tickets helps fund NHPR and The Exchange every day. $50 for one ticket goes a long way. $100 for three goes even further. Pick up the phone and buy yours now. 1-888-805-6477 or go online, nhpr.org.
And getting your raffle tickets only takes about 2 minutes of your time. So if you do it right now, you're not going to miss 1 minute of The Exchange. All we need is your name and your telephone number so we can reach you when you're our winner. We can take your credit card information and how many tickets you want to buy. $50 for one, three for 100, six for 200. Whatever you want to do, just buy your raffle tickets now before the day slips away. It'll 2 minutes of your time and you'll have done your part and got your tickets. 1-888-805-6477 or our safe and secure website is nhpr.org.
The grand prize for our summer car raffle this year is a choice of one of a new car from any of Grupponi's Auto Group's six dealerships, Ford, Honda, Hyundai, Mazda, Scion, and Toyota. It's a pretty fancy problem choosing which new car to buy, but that could be your problem when you choose to get your $50 raffle ticket or three for $100. Pick up the phone and get them. 1-888-805-6477.
And your support in the form of these tickets goes a long way in paying for shows, local programs like the ones that Rebecca and I work for, Word of Mouth and The Exchange. We do this invasive species show now, it seems like, every summer because it's so wildly popular with our listeners who are in touch with nature and the environment. So this time we're actually doing a two-part series, one on plants tomorrow, on bugs and things in wildlife and things like that. So just when you call in with your questions, we're looking for you to call in with your support now. 1-888-805-6477.
The deadline is Saturday at noon. Pick up the phone and call now. The grand prize, a new car. Second prize, a Trek bike and roof rack. Third prize, brand new kayak. A lot of great prizes, but you need to buy raffle tickets to get in to win. They're $50 for one, $100 for three, 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call. You can also buy tickets online at nhpr.org.
More of The Exchange in just a moment on NHPR. Mostly sunny across New Hampshire today. High temperatures upper 70s to mid 80s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows mid 50s to lower 60s. Partly sunny day tomorrow. Chance of afternoon showers. High temperatures upper 70s to lower 80s. It'll be partly to mostly cloudy for Friday with showers. Chance of thunderstorms. Highs mid 70s to lower 80s. Partly cloudy Saturday. Chance of showers with highs from lower 70s north ranging to lower 80s in southern New Hampshire. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from the Wealth Management Group in Merrimack County Savings Bank. Trust in wealth management services provided by advisors committed to your financial needs. TheMerrimack.com. And from the Barnstormers Theater in Tamworth, presenting a tongue-in-cheek musical treat, 10 Nights in a Barroom, on stage now through August 3rd. Tickets at barnstormerstheater.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, invasive plants in the Granite State. It's the first of a two-day mini-series on invasive species. Today, plants. Tomorrow, animals. We also have a link on our website to the Invasive Plant Atlas of New England. If you want to identify any species that you might have seen in your backyard or in the woods or along the road, again, our website, nhpr.org. You can join us right now with a phone call, your comments and questions in terms of what you've observed among invasive plants in your area. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Heidi Holman is here with New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. Scott Ollinger, professor of natural resources at UNH. And Amy Smagula, she's with New Hampshire's Department of Environmental Services. And before we go to our listeners, all of you, Heidi, I did want to ask you a question because this is important. You're a wildlife diversity biologist. Talk about how invasive plants affect the diversity of wildlife that we see here in New Hampshire.
Sure, Laura. Well, as I mentioned before, the effect of invasive plants is on the habitat of wildlife, and it can be a structure or function of that habitat. One particular example is we're observing monarch butterflies laying their eggs on the invasive black swallowwort, which is not its native host plant. And when these eggs are laid, they're not hatching, or if they're hatching, the larvae do not have the appropriate food to develop. And so it creates a sink for a local population. If this was magnified over large-scale areas, then we could start to see a problem with their population. Another particular example is that change in structure. Often we find in shrublands that have been invaded by invasive plants, perhaps autumn olive, glossy buckthorn, there's a shift in where the birds are nesting, and they're more open to predators, perhaps. They're, again, creating a sink area where the success of reproduction declines over time.
Wow. So, Scott, I'm really struck by these stories that Heidi's telling us. So here's wildlife trying to adapt, if we could put it that way, to invasive species, but it's not right. And in some instances, like the monarch butterfly, it's devastating.
Yeah, that's right. And that's not an uncommon story. It's an unfortunate one here in New Hampshire, especially, you know, given how nice it is to have monarch butterflies around. But globally, the decline in biodiversity that we've been seeing over the last 100 years or more, invasive species and the effect that has on animal habitat is one of the leading causes of that decline in biological diversity.
So Scott, is there any such thing as a helpful invasive, or are they all bad?
Well, it depends on how you want to define helpful. You know, certainly there are some invasive species that were brought here intentionally because someone at some point in history thought that they would be helpful either as an agricultural crop or an ornamental plant. So there can be some, you know, positive effects that some people value. Often they, you know, bring those species here without really understanding what the other consequences will be further down the road. So it's really hard overall when you take a holistic look at it to find any particular invasive species that I think we would say we're glad is here. You know, by and large, the effect they have on native habitat is overall negative.
All right. Well, let's take some calls and emails from our listeners. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. And up first is Steve in Goffstown. Hi, Steve. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. I was wondering if anybody could tell me what this tall, ornamental-looking grass that's pushing out the cattails is.
Okay, and thanks for the call, Steve. And by the way, we've also got a link on our website, Steve, if you want to look at some of the pictures. But go ahead, Amy. If it's pushing out cattails, it sounds like a water plant.
It is most likely Phragmites or common reed, and it is a species that started out at the seacoast. And it was native at one point, but we had an invasive type introduced, and it likes really salty soils. So what's happening is it's making inroads from the seacoast area along our major highways and roadways due to road salting activities. So we have to salt our roads for public health and safety in the winter. However, the salt that's running off is creating these little habitats or corridors along our roadways, causing this Phragmites to come inland. And of course, cattail marshes are definitely little sinks for any runoff, which will have some of that salt in it. And Phragmites is coming in and taking over those habitats. So where we had great habitat for muskrat and red-winged blackbirds and other species that really liked the cattail habitat, we have Phragmites that's coming in and causing this monoculture, this same species stand in those wetland habitats and changing the landscape there.
Wow, everybody loves cattails. I remember as a child going into the marshes and seeing them. So how do you get rid of this stuff, Amy?
Phragmites is really a challenging species to get rid of. It has almost tree-like root systems that are very thick and woody and tough to get rid of. So as with any invasive species and management, the best thing to do is find it early and remove it before the root systems get really well established. So hand-pulling them and making sure you trace all those root systems and pull them out. Dredging, digging, or herbicides may be needed if the established infestations get rather large.
Well, while we're talking about water plants, I want to bring another voice into our conversation. Beverly Nelson is with us, president of the Lees Pond Association in Moultonboro, manager of several local Weed Watch programs where they work on preventing invasive species. And Beverly Nelson, really nice to have you. Thanks for your time.
Oh, Thank you, Laura.
Well, what are your responsibilities as a weed watcher? And by the way, that's a great title.
Well, we watch weeds. And what right now my responsibility is to make sure that the town of Moultonboro has people watching our 70 miles of shoreline to look for the invasive plant, to report on regrowth if we think we've got it in those certain places. So I'm really a point person for people reporting back to me about the progress or the lack of progress of these invasive weeds in our water body.
And are you mostly focused on Lake Winnipesaukee, Beverly?
Well, it started out that I was mostly focused on my own water body, which is Lee's Pond that flows into Winnipesaukee, but in the last 4 years, I've become part of the Moultonboro Milfoil Committee, and we are concerned for all of the 70 miles of shoreline that the town of Moultonboro manages. So I have a big job. I've got about 30 people that help me weed watch.
And 30 people, I'm guessing some of those, Beverly, are what are called lake hosts, where they sort of hang out by the boat launches, say very nicely to people, hey, can I check your boat for milfoil, little fragments of milfoil that you might have dragged in from another lake. Is that correct?
No, that's not the weed watchers. The weed watchers, they get out in their kayaks.
I see.
And,
They're really in there then.
Yeah, they cruise around and look for the plants. And if they're not sure that they're an invasive plant, they get a little sample and put it in a bag and bring it to me, and we look at it. If I can't determine what it is, then I send it on to DES, and they try to help us identify it. But no, they're out there. They're supposed to go out at least once a month, and they have selected an area that they're going to watch.
Winnipesaukee is beloved, as you know, New Hampshire's most visited lake. People from far away, you say New Hampshire, and a lot of them will say Lake Winnipesaukee. So what are you seeing there? What are you seeing out there in what I, if I could call it New Hampshire's favorite lake?
We see a lot of milfoil.
Really? Yeah.
Yes. And we've been working, the town of Moultonboro 4 years ago decided to really combat this and make inroads. And so we have been spending a lot of money, town money, to get rid of this weed by either hand pulling or using the dash divers. That's the diver assisted suction harvest. They use the pontoon boats and the divers that go down and dive.
Do you use chemicals, Beverly, against milfoil?
There's use chemicals when the infestation is very large or in an area that is very difficult to get to.
Sure.
Our goal is to get past having to use chemicals, but do use some
there's
chemicals.
There's probably some political pushback to that. Some people don't like the ideas of putting chemicals in the water.
That's right. And I personally, you know, want to use as little as possible. We'd like to do it like, it's sort of like your lawn. If you've got two or three dandelions out there, you're not going to put a whole lot of chemical on your lawn. But if your lawn is completely infestated with weeds, you're going to try and get rid of it, and then you're going to maintain it after that.
Just real quickly, if I could, Beverly, you know, you talked about Winnipesaukee, obviously a huge job and lots of milfoil, as you said. How about Lee's Pond? What's the situation there now?
Well, you know, we identified and started working on our infestation 11 years ago. And so we've been working it a long time, and we've reached a point now where we feel really good. We have a little bit, but it seems like we're able to manage it now.
Wow.
We're never going to get rid of it.
Yeah, and a rare success story, right? I mean, this is a tough battle against a tough plant. Beverly, thank you very much. Real interesting stuff.
Thank you.
That's Beverly Nelson, president of the Lees Pond Association in Moultonboro, manager of several local Weed Watch programs where they work on preventing invasive species. The number for you to join us this hour as we focus on invasive plants is 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go right back to our listeners. Woody's calling from Plymouth. Hi, Woody, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, go ahead, Woody.
So this is my first time calling in. I'm a longtime listener, but I just wanted to bring up my father is a forester and specializes in dealing with invasive species, and he frequently has to use very, very harmful chemicals to deal with them, and that's something he and I have always kind of argued about, just because it seems a little counterproductive to fight one environmental nuisance with another. So I was wondering if your guest could kind of talk about that issue.
You know, Woody, I love that question. And Scott, why don't you tackle that first? I also read something yesterday where someone said, is combating these invasive species with all sorts of nasty chemicals really worth it? What do you think, Scott?
Well, there isn't a simple answer to that, as you might guess. And it really depends on the threat that that particular invasive species poses relative to the threat that the chemical that you might want to use might also pose. There are cases where I think it's an option that should be on the table. Most of the herbicides or, you know, chemical agents that are approved for use right now break down in the environment at some point, even though they have harmful consequences while they're there. But once an invasive species gets a foothold in our landscape, it's there forever. And so the negative consequences of that last typically much, much longer. So I think it's an option that has to be on the table when, you know, some of the more persistent and harmful invasive species are what we're trying to combat.
And Scott, then, is it correct to say that the chemicals that might be used today aren't the chemicals that were perhaps used 20, 30 years ago? They're not as bad as they used to be?
Yeah, they're not. I'm not an expert on the chemistry of, you know, herbicides, but they definitely are not the chemicals that used to be used many years ago. And so, that's not an endorsement of just spraying herbicides. You know, there are harmful consequences, but the standards for herbicides being put in production and approved for sale are more stringent than they were several decades ago.
All right. Well, Woody, it's a great question, so thank you very much. We will take more of your calls after a short break. I've got some emails, too, that I'd like to share with both of you, but let's check in now very quickly with our summer car raffle.
Thank you, Laura. And hearing Laura Kanoy is one of the many reasons you value NHPR. So help us keep Laura and the exchange coming your way by supporting NHPR now during our summer car raffle. Pick up a few tickets online at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477. I'm Keith Shields, executive producer of this show, along with senior producer for Word of Mouth, Rebecca Lavoie.
And you are running out of time to join an HPR Summer Car Raffle. We're giving away a Trek bike with a Yakima roof rack donated by S&W Sports, a kayak from Portsmouth Kayak Adventures, and our grand prize is a new car from any of Gripponi Automotive Group's 6 dealerships. 3 prizes up for grabs. All you have to do is buy a ticket for $50, or how about 3 for $100? 1-888-805-6477. You can also buy them online at nhpr.org.
You know, NHPR receives less than 7% of its funding from the federal government, and that's obviously not nearly enough to pay for the amount of listening that you do. But thanks to listener support through the purchase of raffle tickets, we don't have to depend on federal funding to keep the news on the air. So give us a call. Support shows like The Exchange at 1-888-805-6477. Or if you're listening online, go to nhpr.org, check out our prizes there, and buy some tickets.
A lot of raffles have a car as a grand prize, but we are leaving it up to you, if you're the winner, to decide which car to drive away with. It could be you when you get your raffle tickets. They're $50 for one, $100 for 3. You'll get to choose any car on the Gripponi Auto Lot: Ford, Toyota, Scion, Honda, Hyundai, or Mazda. There's a discussion going on NHPR's Facebook page going on right now answering this question. Which car would you choose? 1-888-805-6477 or online, nhpr.org.
But you can only make that choice if you buy a ticket. And it's really easy to do. There are several sort of eligibility requirements. You do have to be 18 years or older. You need to be a New Hampshire, Vermont, or Massachusetts resident. You have to have a mailing address from one of those three states. So if you're here visiting us from one of our neighbor states on a summer vacation, you can buy tickets too. You cannot work for NHPR or be related to anyone who does. You can look at our complete rules online. And while you're there at NHPR.org, pick yourself up a few raffle tickets. One for $50, three for $100. 1-888-805-6477.
You love NHPR because we take on the complex issues without reducing them to simple sound bites. Think about the conversation you're listening to about invasive species in the state. The time and resources needed for this kind of coverage comes from listener support. So support the station you love by purchasing your NHPR car raffle tickets. They're one for $50 or three for $100. 1-888-805-6477 or NHPR.org.
Now think about it. Did you make a New Year's resolution to get in shape, and have you been putting it off ever since? No problem. It happens. But now NHPR might have the solution from you. I can tell you that I'm an avid cyclist here. Getting on a bike is a great way to exercise and get in shape. You could possibly win a Trek bike donated by S&W Sports and a roof rack to carry that around on your car. So 1-888-805-6477 is the way to get in on that bike or the kayak or the car. Also, you can purchase tickets online, nhpr.org.
In addition to winning some of these great prizes, one reason for buying a few raffle tickets, NPR News. Out of some 10,000 radio stations coast to coast, this is one of the few on which you can hear NPR news magazines and newscasts. The reason these programs exist is because across the nation, thousands of your fellow listeners support their local public radio stations. You can support us and win a car. $50 for one ticket, $100 for three. 1-888-805-6477. Buy them online, nhpr.org.
You might be thinking, well, I don't need a new car. I just have a new car. But consider this. You don't have to keep the car for yourself. You could give it to your mother or your father. Maybe you have a son or daughter going to college. Keep the new car for yourself. Give them the old one. 1-888-805-6477. You can donate the car to charity if you want, or nhpr.org.
Make the next 2 minutes the most productive 2 minutes of your day. We don't need a whole lot of information. In just 2 minutes, you help create thousands of news reports from across the country, around the world, hundreds of minutes of the exchange, and put your name in the hat to win some great prizes. Tickets are $50 for one or three for $100. 1-888-805-6477.
A new car from the Grupponi Automotive Group could be yours. A Trek bike with a Yakima roof wrap from S&W Sports could be yours. A kayak from Portsmouth Kayak Adventures could be yours. But you have to purchase our tickets. One for $50, three for $100. The deadline is this Saturday at noon. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR at 10 o'clock. It's the Diane Rehm Show. Mostly sunny across New Hampshire today. High temperatures upper 70s to mid 80s. Partly cloudy tonight. Lows mid 50s to lower 60s. We'll have a partly sunny day tomorrow. Chance of afternoon showers. Tomorrow's highs upper 70s to lower 80s. Partly to mostly cloudy Friday with showers. Chance of thunderstorms. Highs Friday mid 70s to lower 80s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Algonquin Playhouse's production of Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice's family musical, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, now through August 24th, AlgonquinPlayhouse.org. And from the Shaheen and Gordon Law Firm, business and corporate law, health care, family matters, criminal defense, and personal injury, offices in Dover, Concord, and Manchester, ShaheenGordon.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the first of a two-day mini-series on invasive species in New Hampshire. Today, we're looking at plants. Tomorrow, we'll look at invasive animals. We have a link on our website to the Invasive Plant Atlas of New England, where you can try to identify any species that you might be seeing in your backyard or along the road. The website, nhpr.org. The phone number for you to join us now with your questions and comments is 1-800-892-6477. The email address address, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And let's go right back to our listeners, and Jerry's waiting in Nashua. Hi, Jerry, you're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for a very interesting program.
Go ahead.
I have three questions for your guests, and it involves Didymo. And I'm interested if they can tell us where it came from. And it's very messy and unsightly, but does it have a bad effect on the streams? And also, how successful have we been at keeping rock snot from spreading to other water bodies? And I'll take the answers off the air. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome, Jerry, and good questions. And I hate to talk about Didymo, Amy, because it's so gross, but he's right. We should talk about it.
Didymo, or some people may more affectionately call it rock snot, is a species. It's an algae that does take over a lot of river systems. It's actually native to the poles, very northern, very southern areas. It likes extremely cold climate conditions. And it's an algae that you wouldn't expect to have in our area because it does like really cold, really low nutrient conditions and really fast flow.
And from what we hear, everything's warming, so...
Everything is warming, and you would think it wouldn't like the warm conditions. But we do in our pristine river systems, the Androscoggin, the Connecticut River, the Saco River, those are conditions, low nutrient, fast flow conditions, and slightly colder waters where the species can survive. Right now, we've only found it in the Connecticut River from just north of Lake Francis down to about Northumberland. So it's persisting in a mat form in about a 45-mile stretch of the river. Unfortunately, we're not doing any control activities because it could have impacts on other species in the river system. But we could see Didymo changing the structure of the food web in the river systems where it invades. It will smother out habitat and change the mayflies, the stoneflies, the caddisflies, which are great food for the trophy fish, the trophy trout that are in the Connecticut River. And we may see a crash in the population of trout or a change in the population of trout in the long term.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call, Jerry. It's a good question and something that we have talked about before. I want to share another email with you. This is from Christopher in Manchester, who says, please comment on the backyard shrub known as burning bush. Are they considered invasive because they grow so quickly and take over our yards? As pretty as they are, mine certainly do. First to you, I think, Heidi Holman, and then Scott, I have a question for you too. They are considered invasive, right?
Yes, they are. Yep, they were listed in 2007. They were prohibited from the sale in nurseries. And I've witnessed the same thing even in my mother's yard, just little sprouts coming up from all over. They are very pretty, but we would recommend maybe looking for some sort of native shrub to replace that, perhaps a serviceberry or something. You could get that different type of foliage color in the fall, but you wouldn't have so much of a struggle combating those regrowths.
No, so it's interesting. So you said in 2007 it was listed as invasive. That means before that it was okay to sell it at your local nursery store?
Well, actually, I think that's when they phased out the plant from sale. And so, yes, it was legal to sell, and it was a commonly used plant. And that's what we find in a lot of these cases. The first plantings of these invasive plants show no signs of having some sort of impact on the landscape. But the more you introduce and the longer they're there, then we start to see the signs.
Could you comment there too, Scott, maybe to you? It's interesting what Chris says. He says they're pretty, and I've heard this about other invasive species, purple loosestrife. Some people say, hey, I like seeing them by the side of the road, and the soil there is not great anyway, so why not? What do you think?
Well, you know, there's certainly that's part of the reason that we have some of these plant species, burning bush among them. One of my own favorite invasive species, I hate to call an invasive species a favorite.
I'm kind of surprised by that, but go ahead.
Well,
yeah.
Multiflora rose is a species that's very fragrant. It has nice, pretty flowers. It's been responsible for the northern spread of the northern mockingbird. And for those of us who like to listen to mockingbirds singing in the summer, mockingbirds probably wouldn't be here if it weren't for the invasion of Multiflora rose. But there also are a number of negative consequences that it has, both on ecological systems by displacing native shrubs and even on agricultural systems where it gets into the edges of fields and some, you know, grazing animals, cows, for example, don't like to go near it. And it has an impact on agriculture as well as on native ecosystem. So as much as I like northern mockingbirds, I'm not advocating for spreading multiflora rose. Burning bush is very similar. It's a very pretty plant. There's a graduate student here at UNH named Rachel Johnson who just did a wonderful master's thesis on burning bush and found populations of it in understory forests in New Hampshire that look like they had been there for several decades.
Wow.
And they are slowly spreading, but as they're spreading, they are displacing native New Hampshire understory plants.
And again, if you want to see what burning bush looks like or some of these other plants that Scott mentioned, we've got a link on our website to the Invasive Plant Atlas of New England. So pictures there. Also, we will put up a link pretty soon to that mapping project that Heidi Holman mentioned earlier, Mapping the Invasive Plants of New Hampshire. It's all at NHPR.org. Again, NHPR.org is the website where you can find this information. You know, we just have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to return to a theme that you raised earlier, Heidi, and Scott raised it as well, and that's the idea of pick your battles. Give us a little bit more on sort of what we're really focusing on in terms of invasive plants and what we're saying, you know, we're just going to have to let that one go.
Sure. Well, originally when we started identifying invasive plants as having a negative impact on some of our natural resources, we were very opportunistic about where we were perhaps doing control projects. Perhaps we had the ability to manage there or the funding for some reason. And so, again, we've created this prioritization map that includes values not just for wildlife. Forestry is also included. Important agricultural soils, which all have economic impacts here in New Hampshire. And basically what we're doing is we're saying, if you were going to go and invest your money, which is often limited, these are the areas in your particular locale, and we've organized it at a town level, that you would have the best impact. And together, if we all used this selection process, perhaps we will mitigate and minimize impacts to natural resources and economic resources in the future.
Yeah, and Scott, you're working on that at the national level pretty soon, right?
Well, yes. And, you know, one of the, I think, important issues with respect to how we choose our battles is understanding invasive species better and better. And we have a slightly better understanding of how invasive species get started and spread. But in terms of what the overall trends are, what kinds of species we should look out for, what kinds of long-term impacts might we anticipate, there's a lot of research that we need to do. I'm going to give an interesting local example. There's an understory forest herbaceous plant called garlic mustard that some of you may be familiar with, and it looks very inauspicious. It's kind of low to the ground. It doesn't look like the kind of plant that could displace any of our native tree species, which are dominant overstory plants. But recent research has shown that there is a chemical competition mechanism that this garlic mustard plant can use that inhibits the growth of fungi down in the soil that are associated with tree roots.
Wow, and so, garlic mustard sounds good, right?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a plant that some people might, you know, think is a nice plant to have around, but that kind of impact of an invasive species is one that doesn't necessarily emerge early on in our identification of it being here. It can take a long time for that type of mechanism to have an effect on our native tree species. And so we might, you know, at the moment, we might not think about that as a high priority species, but as we understand better and better how they work and why they get started and how they spread and what their impacts are, that type of species perhaps could rise higher on the list of priorities.
On that pick your battles list. Yeah. Scott, I'm sorry I got to jump in here for just a second. I want to close out, but before I do, Amy Smagula, just very quickly, folks are clearly invested in this and clearly concerned about it. Is there like one central place where people can go for information to find out more?
We do have an established New Hampshire Invasive Species Committee in New Hampshire, which is made up of state agency program managers, UNH Cooperative Extension staff, foresters, and agronomists. So you can find that online at the Department of Agriculture and find the people that are represented, and you can get in contact with them. And we're each connected in on the local, state, regional, national, and even international level. So we are bringing a lot of good science back to New Hampshire with our activities.
All right. Well, it's been great to talk to all of you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
The Exchange is a production of NHPR.
You want to learn new things about the world, politics, science, culture, the environment, so you listen to NHPR. We bring it all to you through the generosity of our listener supporters. I'm Rebecca Lavoy, and it's NHPR Summer Car Raffle. Pick up your tickets now. They are three for $100 by giving us a call, 1-888-805-6477 or online at nhpr.org. Here with more is Keith Shields.
And the grand prize of our summer raffle this year is, as it is every year, a car. And this time, you'll get to choose from one of Grapponi's six dealerships, Ford, Honda, Hyundai, Mazda, Scion, and Toyota, that the winner can choose from. I would suggest a Toyota. That's what I have from Grapponi. Which would you choose when you donate, when you buy your tickets at $50 a piece or three for $100? You'll be in the winning to run that, as well as a Trek bike donated by S&W Sports and a kayak courtesy of Portsmouth Kayak Adventures. When you call and purchase your tickets at 1-888-805-6477 or online nhpr.org.
As you stop and think about how many NHPR car raffle tickets you want to buy, stop and think about the voices you hear on NHPR. Laura Kanoy and Virginia Prescott and Brady Carlson and Rick Ganley. These are the voices of reason, the voices of understanding. Help ensure these voices can continue to be heard. Buy three raffle tickets for $100 at 1-888-805-6477. If you've just fired up your computer at work, how about nhpr.org?
We have a lot of raffles have a car as a grand prize, but see, we're leaving it up to you to decide which car you want. That's a great deal. So you can only decide if you buy your tickets, and tickets are $50 a piece. They're three for $100, so that's a great deal. Or if you want, you can do six for $100 or nine for $300 or keep going up that way. 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call to purchase your tickets. You can learn a lot more about our prizes when you go to nhpr.org, and it's safe and secure, so you can purchase your raffle tickets there.
Getting a raffle ticket is so easy. There's just a couple of rules. You have to be 18 or older. You need to have a New Hampshire, Vermont, or Massachusetts mailing address.